Walk into any American supermarket today and you're confronted with 45,000 items screaming their nutritional virtues at you. Low fat, high fiber, now with omega-3s. Your great-grandmother wouldn't recognize most of these products as food. She certainly wouldn't understand why a box of cereal needs a PhD to decode. Yet here we are, a nation simultaneously overfed and malnourished, spending billions on diet books while getting progressively sicker. How did eating, the most natural human activity, become so complicated? The answer lies in a quiet revolution that transformed food from nourishment into a collection of nutrients, and eating from a cultural practice into a medical intervention. Something fundamental shifted in the 1980s. Food stopped being food and became a delivery system for nutrients. This wasn't accidental. It represented the triumph of nutritionism, an ideology that reduces eating to its chemical components. The transformation began in 1977 when Senator McGovern's committee addressed America's diet-related diseases. Their initial advice was direct: reduce consumption of meat. The meat industry forced a retreat to scientific language about reducing saturated fat intake. This rewording changed everything. Dietary guidelines now spoke of invisible nutrients, entities without powerful lobbies, rather than actual foods. By 1982, nutritionism had conquered official policy. The National Academy of Sciences report on diet and cancer focused entirely on nutrients, despite objections from panel members. Terms like polyunsaturated, antioxidants, and phytochemicals colonized the space previously occupied by food itself. Eating transformed from an intuitive cultural practice into a medical procedure requiring expert guidance. No ideology could better serve food manufacturers. By suggesting engineered foods can be more nutritious than natural ones, nutritionism provides perfect justification for processing. Consider margarine, repeatedly re-engineered to align with each nutritional trend, marching on, unfazed and apparently unkillable, despite causing health problems. In 1973, the industry overturned the imitation rule, requiring fake foods to be labeled as such. The FDA's new rule allowed products to avoid that label if they weren't nutritionally inferior, redefining food as merely the sum of recognized nutrients. Following the 1977 dietary goals, the industry re-engineered thousands of products, launching a golden age for food science as hyphens sprouted like dandelions: low fat, no cholesterol, high fiber. The 30-year war on dietary fat represents nutritionism's grandest experiment, one that likely ruined meals and worsened health. Harvard researchers quietly dismantled the lipid hypothesis. Saturated fat showed few meaningful links to heart disease, while dietary cholesterol proved only weakly associated with heart problems. The supreme irony? Trans fat, what nutritionists urged us toward by switching butter for margarine, is the one fat conclusively linked to heart disease. It raises bad cholesterol, lowers good cholesterol, increases triglycerides, promotes inflammation, and triggers insulin resistance. The transformation reshaped even animals, with scientists breeding leaner livestock for fat-phobic consumers. Whole foods couldn't change their nutritional stripes like processed competitors. When Atkins hit in 2003, bread and pasta got redesigned, while poor, unreconstructed potatoes and carrots were left out in the carbohydrate cold. Americans dutifully replaced fats with carbs, embracing Snackwell's cookies and high-fructose corn syrup. We grew remarkably fat on this low-fat diet. Many date the obesity and diabetes epidemic to the late 1970s when we began carb binging to avoid fat. Nutrition science struggles because its tools are poorly suited for complex food systems. Scientists must isolate variables, yet even simple foods contain countless interacting compounds. We don't eat nutrients, we eat foods that behave differently than their parts. Antioxidants work in test tubes, but often fail as supplements, likely needing other food components. A single thyme leaf contains dozens of compounds interacting in barely understood ways. The zero-sum nature of eating, more of one food means less of another, makes isolating effects nearly impossible. Lifestyle differences between populations create unavoidable confounding factors. Case control studies prove especially problematic when patients change diets after diagnosis or blame illness on currently vilified nutrients. When McGovern's committee adopted national dietary goals in 1977, they ignored warnings about potential for harmful effects, launching history's largest nutritional experiment. Though fat as percentage of calories declined, total fat consumption never actually dropped. We simply added more carbs. The simplified message, "eat more low-fat foods," served everyone. Consumers got permission for processed foods, manufacturers created profitable products, and nutrition scientists remained indispensable. In 1982, 10 overweight, diabetic Aborigines from Western Australia returned to their traditional hunter-gatherer lifestyle. After 7 weeks eating only hunted and gathered foods, seafood, game, insects, and wild plants, they lost weight, their blood pressure dropped, and their metabolic abnormalities either improved significantly or completely normalized. With two-thirds of Americans overweight or obese and diabetes rates rising sharply since 1990, the evidence is stark. People eating the Western diet suffer substantially higher rates of cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and obesity than those eating traditional diets. Food industrialization accelerated dramatically around 1870 with roller mills replacing traditional stone grinding. These rollers removed wheat germ and bran, producing white flour with extended shelf life, but stripping up to 80% of wheat's nutrients, vital B vitamins, vitamin E, and essential minerals. The consequences were severe. Devastating epidemics of pellagra and beriberi, particularly affecting poor communities. Though fortification addressed these deficiency diseases, scientists later discovered that refining carbohydrates contributes to chronic conditions like diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. How a culture eats may matter as much as what it eats. The French paradox reveals an entirely different relationship with food: small portions, rare snacking, shared meals, and leisurely eating. They consume less but savor more, extracting greater food experience from fewer calories, possibly explaining their slimness despite indulgent diets. The concept of the meal needs defending in America, where traditional mealtimes have dissolved into continuous eating occasions. About a fifth of American eating now happens in cars. Yet meals serve crucial functions, civilizing children, teaching manners, and developing culture itself. Traditional food cultures, Japanese, Mexican, Indian, Mediterranean, generally produce healthier people than Western diets. These represent accumulated wisdom through cultural evolution, demonstrating ingenious nutritional practices science later confirms, combining corn with beans in Latin America or fermenting soybeans in Asia. The whole dietary pattern matters more than any single ingredient. Attempts to isolate the X factor in Mediterranean or French diets typically fail because these diets work as integrated systems, not collections of nutrients. In a world requiring expert interpretation to eat, the most radical act is eating food your great-grandmother would recognize. Cooking and gardening powerfully escape fast food culture. Even modest gardens yield astonishing produce while transforming pointless exercise into purposeful labor connecting body and mind to food production. Garden produce arrives alive, communicating directly through scent, color, and taste. Cooking from scratch provides complete knowledge no supermarket label matches. These acts subvert by reclaiming control from the food industry and nutritionism, the belief that food is too complex for non-experts. The wisdom in eat food, not too much, mostly plants, isn't just dietary advice. It's a revolutionary manifesto against a system profiting from confusion. Reclaiming eating from the medical-industrial complex restores our relationship with nature, each other, and the simple pleasure of shared meals. Your body already knows what to eat. The question is whether you're ready to trust yourself again.